You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings.
I don't know about you, but the future scares the hell out of me. We have a president who personifies the ugly American, who has turned the clock back 75 years or more on just about every issue of our times. We just ceded an extremely strategically important part of the world to a megalomaniacal KGB agent. Climate change is putting the human species at risk. California is going down in flames. Income and wealth disparities are uncivilized. At any given moment, in any given place, someone could bust out their AR-15 and unload the clip on us. Our communities are segregated along class and color lines. Our educational system is the best tool we have for locking inequity into our society, and we use it liberally. Racism is a pox on all of our houses. Just shoot me. I have to stop paying attention to the news. Something that isn't in the news enough is how we plan our futures. In Lehigh Valley, the organization that has the responsibility for planning the future of the Lehigh Valley is called the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, headed by Becky Bradley. Welcome.
Thanks, Alan.
With Becky is Matt Assad, a former reporter at the Morning Call, who I got to know pretty well over the years, and the interesting dance that goes on between regular sources and reporters. Matt Assad, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I rather liked the dance back in the day.
I did, too. Matt's got this weird accent, this Pittsburgh thing. It's kind of not quite Midwest, but it's sort of
weird about it.
It isn't Northeast either, and he's still a Pirates fan on top of it, so you got to give some some credit. Okay, so Becky, make me feel better about the world. What have you got going on that might make it better?
So now that I'm sad and depressed after that intro, no, just kidding. We just finished the final draft of the regional plan, and we called it Future LV, and that was on purpose because we know we have issues today, and the plan outlines some of those. But then, what is our path forward? I mean, you hit on it a little in your intro, but I mean, we have really serious effects related to climate change in the Lehigh Valley alone. One of the key things that we worked with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation on is, you know, they've had a huge increase in things like landslides related to heavier rainfall events and, you know, stormwater issues associated with that. And then that impacts our stream quality and all water quality and all of these things. And so we've even had to set aside money as part of the planning process to address these real things that are in front of us. I did not make you feel better about the world, did I?
No, you haven't. So there's got to be something in the plan that's worth talking about.
There's a lot of things in the plan. There is a lot of things in the plan.
Why don't you tell me what you're most excited about there, and we'll go from there.
I mean,
and
I'm a planner, right?
So
there's no one thing.
There really isn't one thing. One of the things that I'm really, really proud of, and it's something, too, that we got a lot of support from the counties on, especially Northampton County, is prioritizing the environment and farmland preservation over other things. Not that you actually play rock, paper, scissors with development or, you know, prioritization of things, but if the simplest way to look at it is the environment trumps absolutely everything in this plan, followed by farmland preservation. That, you know, and within that, you have all your safety, your equity, your health. There's another key thing in here that we never really addressed in the plan before, so we started to address it now, is the health in all policies. That our public health, which gets at some of those issues of equity and poverty and race and segregation and things that you focus on every day, in trying to make places that are more not only healthy but more equitable.
So, I mean, along the health lines and the environment, for that matter, who's collecting? It just occurred to me, nobody's really collecting data on climate change in Lehigh Valley, right? I mean, what could, do you have data that, that backs up any of the stuff you talk about?
We do have some, especially relating to air quality.
Well, don't tell me it's going to totally bum me out. I'll just shoot
it will.
Myself.
Don't.
Go ahead. What?
But one of the strong focuses, and there's a lot of after action things that come out of a plan like this, because this is sort of a general, it's a general plan. And in fact, in a lot of states, they call them comprehensive general plans or just general plans. But in Pennsylvania, it's called a comprehensive plan. But this is also our long range transportation plan, too. So from a policy perspective, bringing together then that financial investment strategy with the land use strategy is one of the most important things that we could do, because now we at least have road, bridge, bike, ped, and transit monies aligned with the land use strategy. So this then allows us to then support more transit in places where people need it the most. And some of those things that we tried to do for years and years but weren't able to do.
It ties money to making streets more welcoming to pedestrians.
Well, let's stick with the environment,
right,
though, for a minute. The,
okay.
The one piece of data that I'm familiar with about the environment really doesn't have anything to do with climate change. It's about the particulates in the air and everything.
Yes.
That the Lehigh Valley's child asthma rate is something like in the top
really
five
high.
Worst in the country. Okay. What other stuff is there? What else do you have that's out there? I mean, are the temperature changes, the heavy rains?
Yes.
We go through this. There's periods of rains now that are like
monsoons.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. And actually, some of that policy work we did as early as 2014. And we have a whole series of climate policies available on our website in more specific detail. But certain species of trees are not as viable here anymore. That's going to be a huge issue. Maples. There's a whole list. Some fish species that need colder waters aren't going to be as viable long term. We're already starting to see that change. We're seeing more frequent weather events. So there will be heavier rainfalls followed by no
dryer
rain.
Dry
period, right. And so it's almost this kind of yin and yang, but not in a positive way, of things that are happening. And so we have to think about that now. And that's one of the primary reasons why the environment was prioritized over absolutely everything in the plan, because it affects things like pollen in the air, which affects asthma rates. Then you'd start to tie in things on the development equation with, warehouse and logistics development and those sorts of things. And you really start to see that we have an issue that's compounding that needs to be addressed.
And like everything, some of it is human created. Some of it is because we drive more than 14 million daily vehicle miles a day in the Lehigh Valley, and it used to be nine, like 20-some years ago. But there's all, some of it is not human. We are in a valley.
You know, I live in the city of Allentown, and it takes about 8 minutes to get to beautiful, pristine farmland.
Yeah.
And it used to take three, but nonetheless, I think people probably look around and say, geez, this is still a pretty nice place. We don't need to worry about all the warehouses that are pockmarking our suburban communities and rural communities. I've characterized the Lehigh Valley as the cities of Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton, their suburbs, and the soon-to-be suburbs. there's like nothing rural left, because it's all in the eyes of some developer just waiting to get to sink their chops into it. It's been interesting, Becky, to watch you and our friend Don Cunningham kind of spar on the issue. And I've Don knows how I feel about it. He keeps defending that, whether now he's saying $15 an hour warehouse jobs, but we're just paving paradise and putting up warehouses.
It's a huge issue now. I mean,
and there's nothing to do. We can stop it, I guess.
Well, our municipal governments can. In some cases, like the Bethlehem Steel redevelopment, that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. That Lehigh Valley Industrial Park.
Exactly.
Yep,
that makes a lot of sense. Or even if in existing industrial areas, like at Route 100 and I-78, that's already an industrial base, a lot of, the roads can be retooled fairly simply to accommodate more freight and logistics type of growth. And it makes sense because it's by a highway. But where we're seeing them like 3 miles off a roadway, and you have to use two structurally deficient bridges that are owned by PennDOT. But the municipal government has say over that. And that's the way it works in Pennsylvania. So one of the things that we've been trying to do is these multi-municipal comprehensive plans, so we can get all the communities to kind of agree in a certain kind of subregion that, like, look, what you do impacts me and, you know, bring other partners to the table that have a real financial burden associated with some of this development, because the developer's in, they're out. They've made their money, or in a lot of cases, they're being built on spec. Most, in fact, over 90% of the industrial development is built on speculation. So when they're coming through the planning process at the municipal level, they don't even know what the traffic impact is. It's sort of like an estimate in a lot of ways. So the traffic impact studies, the environmental impact analyses that are done are speculative. Why this is important, and I think one of the best examples is actually here in Bethlehem, at the LVIP 7. There's two Walmart.com warehouses. They're roughly the same size, like in the 800,000 square feet each range. One handles small products. So if you order like a pack of socks from Walmart.com, it comes out of that one. The other one handles large items like big bags of dog food and patio furniture and that sort of thing. The small Walmart.com website that handles the small packages, that employs, you know, 800 people, give or take.
Really?
It does. The one next door that handles the larger items, or I'm sorry, the one that handles the smaller items, sorry, I flipped that around, can have as many as 2,000 people during peak season. The one that handles the larger items can have as many as 800 people at Christmas season and that sort of thing when they're moving more televisions and the like. The transportation profile of just getting the workers to that site, it's almost double the difference or more in peak periods between those two. But if you don't know what that impact is before the development is approved, how do you actually plan for that?
Yeah.
Again, in the case of LVIP 7, there was, you know, county support and Lehigh Valley Transportation Study support, which is one of the arms of the LVPC on work on 412 and the city, and everybody partnered to make sure that a situation like that could be accommodated. But if we're talking in places that are, you know, 3 miles off of Route 33 on a two-lane road that you have to travel through either Bath or Nazareth boroughs to get to, is that really a sustainable situation with those far-flung developments? I don't believe so.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. My guest tonight, Becky Bradley, the top person at the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, and Matt Assad, her sidekick, and my former sparring partner at the Morning Call. I'm Alan Jennings, your host tonight. And we're talking about the future LV, the hot new strategic or comprehensive plan for the region. So it used to be, I never thought we really promoted it like we should, but we have a beltway in the Lehigh Valley.
It starts.
You know, 22 and 78 diverge, and then they converge again at the opposite end of the town. And the strategy was essentially that any new development, or at least the proposal was that any new development should take place within that so-called beltway. Mm-hmm. And so I'd get mad at a whole new development going up in Bethlehem Township. My wife would remind me that it's still within the Beltway. So the new plan has basically conceded that the Beltway is pretty much developed inside, and you're now going out toward in various directions.
No.
Okay.
No. In fact, it's the opposite.
Oh.
The plan is really about density. And okay. Adding density within that beltway kind of area. Now, the beltway was always what was inside, but also what was immediately adjacent. And so we set up a whole system of prioritization with even establishing things like road hierarchies, roads that we know could take more vehicles versus ones that couldn't. We prioritized bike and pedestrian. We haven't really done that in the past. Don't ask me why. But we put a really strong focus on that and being able to connect where people live with where they can work, but also recognizing that close to half of our working population lives here and works someplace else outside the valley too. Roughly half
of the Lehigh Valley commutes.
Yeah, of the working population, yep.
It's like 106,000 people per day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
we got 96 or 98 coming here as well, so it's fairly even.
Right. Huh. So that's where those highway systems are really important, because now all of a sudden we've seen, especially related to the warehouse logistics development, a lot of people that are coming into the Lehigh Valley from Berks and Carbon and Schuylkill counties in numbers that we didn't see previously. And that's just happened in the last five or so years, which is good to some extent for their housing markets, but it's not optimal for for, I think, those individuals who we would love for them to live and work here, too.
Besides it being, I think, good planning that we have that kind of density suggestion inside the Beltway, do you get much pushback on that from the more distant municipalities that want the tax base? And like Upper Mount Bethel, I think the elected people want development. The voters don't. It's a weird thing to watch.
That's one of the contentious ones right now. But by and large, no. In fact, most of our more rural communities want to stay and be rural. That's why they're entering into these
multi-municipal plans.
Right. Because they know that farming is a huge part of their economy, and they want to maintain that farming.
And I don't think people understand that the municipalities planning code, which is set by the state, that dictates how municipalities can develop, says that every municipality has to provide for every use.
Correct.
So that means that a farming municipality has to provide for high-density housing, for example.
Correct.
So if you combine municipalities, you take a Slatington and add it to Lynn and Washington or whatever, they can kind of jockey and trade. So Slatington, please give us your development. The more rural municipalities, please take our development. That's right. A good thing, right? So you put a new Walmart in the middle of there. Every municipality is going to be burdened by it, but only one municipality is going to get the tax revenue for it.
Right.
So doesn't it make sense to share that tax revenue and to share the burden of that new development, right?
Yeah. Now, the tax sharing thing is a whole other state issue, but from a land use perspective, it works out really well with the multi-municipal plan, right. So they can share those uses.
And you call for that still. I mean, in Lehigh Valley?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we want people to be able to do that, because it doesn't make sense if you don't have water and sewer and road infrastructure, and that you're going to sacrifice something that the community wants in favor of something that they don't, just because they have to accommodate some random use that the state says that they have to. So it's the only way in Pennsylvania to legally be able to plan for your future as a municipal government is really with your neighbors.
And how many multi-municipal planning efforts do you have going on in Lehigh Valley?
Five right now.
There's some already in place, right?
Yeah, there's multiple ones in place, and there's a lot of updates to those. We just finished Southwest Lehigh last year, and that was a key one, because that's Lower Macungie, which we all know is...
We all do.
Yeah,
it's grown. There's nothing
really
left.
Yeah, basically. and they're trying to save everything that they have left now. And that's a challenge for them, but they're doing a good job with that. Lower Milford, Upper Milford, Albertus, Emmaus, and Macungie boroughs, they came together and did a multi-municipal plan. Northern Lehigh is being updated now. You mentioned that one. That's Slatington, Washington, Lynn, right. Heidelberg, Low Hill, and Weisenberg Townships.
And the newest?
We have the Slate Belt, which is 10, right. Bangor, East Bangor, Lower Mount Bethel, Penn Argyl, Plainfield, Portland, Rosetto, Upper Mount Bethel, Washington, and Wind Gap.
And they're ready up there, I think. They're ready for a whole new way of looking, I think.
They are. And they've already been doing some interesting partnerships, and you've been a key person through the CAACLV in doing that. And actually, you know, your contribution to this plan is what actually moved it forward.
Well, others were there ahead of it. We found
right, but you helped us as a team.
Proud to do that.
Yeah, thank you. It's really meaningful, because they are ready, and you're right. And there are some issues that are normal that are going to come up, like the Upper Mount Bethel issue. There's some former industrial there that we could talk about in a minute.
That's because we have to take a break. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. My guests, Matt Assad and Becky Bradley from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Stay with us. Interesting stuff.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Guest tonight, Becky Bradley, top dog at Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, and her sidekick, Matt Assad, who is the managing editor at the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. You weren't a Hanna-Barbera cartoon fan when you were a kid? That's, yeah. So we were talking about multi-municipal plans. There were two others that are in place.
Yeah, there are. And we have one that's just forming. They're calling themselves River Central. So it's actually East Allen Township, Hanover Township, Lehigh County, North Catasauqua, and Catasauqua. And that one's really starting to come together because of the industrial growth and development.
Wow.
And they want a plan for more
traffic.
Traffic and shared uses and housing. Yeah. And they each have different needs, and so it makes a lot of sense for them.
One of the things that I thought was pretty neat in the plan was the so-called concepts. Mm-hmm. And you know what they look like to me is like a planner in having a dream. I mean, they're like really cool. I mean, I don't know. Is Mike Harrell the mayor in Whitehall?
He is.
Does
yeah.
he know about what you thought?
He's on our commission. Yeah,
really?
He was complicit.
I mean, so tell us, like, what have you got in mind from MacArthur Road? What do you wish you could do?
Well, one of the things that came up to us when we were looking at the plans is there's more right of way, like actual space.
Massive right of way.
Space on the road, on MacArthur Road, than there is on Route 22. And here
really?
We are sinking all this time and effort and money into trying to make 22 safer and less congested. And we look right next door in a road that connects into it, and it actually has more space.
Route 22 is probably faster than MacArthur Road is.
That's because MacArthur Road has traffic lights.
Yeah.
But one of the key things and why we were looking at MacArthur Road is Lanta actually has a Federal Transit Administration approved bus rapid transit express bus plan, which, by the way, is required as a precursor to light rail. And in order to make that happen, we had to think differently about where those routes could actually go and what would happen along those routes. So right now, MacArthur Road between the Walmart and the Lehigh Valley Mall is the most highly traveled section on the Lanta system, then followed by the route from the Lehigh Valley Mall to the Allentown Transportation Center, and then Allentown Transportation Center to Bethlehem Transportation Center, and then over to Easton.
Oh.
So that makes a nice express bus route. So if people then take that express bus, then it can go to a dedicated bus-only lane scenario, and that's the rendering that you see in the plan.
Yeah.
And then it could maybe go to other things, right? They do this stuff all the time.
That's
in
like
other places
the Holy Grail.
The country.
People keep asking for rail. Well, this is the way to it.
It literally is the road to rail.
Well, so that reminds me that you also are the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which means that you essentially control the expenditure of gazillions of transportation dollars.
If only it was gazillions.
If only it was gazillions.
Gazillions divided by something now. But talk about what exactly happens there. And then I want to talk about Route 22.
Sure. There's a separate board that was formed back in the early 1960s. It's called the Lehigh Valley Transportation Study. And it's both counties. The LVPC, we're the permanent secretary, so we do all the legwork for the board, and we're also one vote on the board. PennDOT, Central and District Office, the three cities. And the counties represent all the municipal governments, except the cities. The cities represent themselves. And then Lanta and the Airport Authority. So we're actually a federally designated entity in that regard. So most transportation funding is federal. It's generally an 80-20 split, where 80% is federal government and then 20% is usually the state. We're one of the few regions in the whole U.S., actually, that doesn't require a local match for most projects. Mm-hmm. Though in some cases, there might be a 1% or something that we need to do to make the funding work out. But there's all sorts of federal rules and regulations that go into the expenditure of these funds. And those changed as well as the amount of money that we had available during the development of future LV. And so that clearly created some challenges for us.
So do you have like a constant brawl over these resources? I mean, I saw you kind of having to deal with some challenges from our friends in Northampton County.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it gets me into the question of how politics, because both the two county executives, I think, appoint the How do you get to be a commissioner?
LVTS is a separate entity from the LVPC.
Right.
They cannot be combined.
Okay.
So the LVTS, those are all permanent permanent appointee. So whoever the county executive is the permanent seat on LVTS. So they do the transportation funding and things like that.
I can't imagine what the politics must be, you know, because we've got so many neat demands for infrastructure improvements.
And now less and money.
Nothing to work with, really.
Right, right. Well, I think that was the challenge this go-around, because we found out on July 18th that we'd lost a third of our funding.
Brutal.
Because of the state had made that change. Huh. And again, they're only 20% of the total 100%. Feds are the 80%. So we were really concerned about, could we even now access the federal funds? And there we had a lot of questions. And on top of that, there's all these rules and requirements. For example, the Route 22 bridge, because I know you want to talk about Route 22. It was actually three bridges. One of them was so structurally deficient, like not a sustainable condition, that bridge had to be redone. But it was an enormous part of the budget. So it looked like one county was getting a lot more money than the other. But in actuality, we had to maintain the whole system and the mobility of the region. And the LVTS voted to do that. And they voted to do that 4 years ago. But the transportation funding is really slow. I think of it kind of like syrup. You know, it takes a really long time for projects to go through the environmental review process and make sure that we're working around things like wetlands and endangered species and historic resources, and that we're not adversely affecting what they call environmental justice communities or those communities that have had, in general, long-term situations of inequity. You don't want to adversely harm those folks, and you want to give them opportunity then to have a say at the table and craft projects. So the money takes a long time to expend. And so there was a lot of learning that came into that when you have new elected officials or relatively new elected officials. And the good news is we actually have people on LVTS that are educated and that care. But with less money, losing, you know, $1 billion in an
still
afternoon is going to be tough when you never had enough money to go around anyway.
I thought we were going to widen 22. Wasn't that project supposed to be a widening? I guess it is, but it's been widened for shoulders, right?
That's Matt Assad's fault from when he was with the morning call.
I figured that. I knew that was going
to
come out.
It would be a way to blame me for something.
Yeah, that's right.
It was always the safety project. If everyone remembers Fullerton Avenue, it was you were taking your life in your own hands to get on the road. There was a lot of really serious injuries and fatalities and things like that. One of the 22 project connects a lot of the ramp structures to make it safer, similarly to what you see between like Shanersville and Airport Road. But it also then helps reduce congestion, which then theoretically at least helps improve air quality, because you're not sitting there as long with so many emissions coming out of your vehicle.
And if you notice where all the choke points are, they were all at exits that were sort of inadequate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you kind of fix them, and it's not quite as good as, you know, widening the road by several lanes, but it kind of keeps things flowing.
There is some widening pieces associated with it, but it's really, we think of it, because it's more practical way to think of it, is actually connecting the ramp structures to just make it safer for people to get on and off the highway. You can't just, there's not enough money to just inadvertently widen the road, but it would also mean that we couldn't put resources to things that were really critical, like other roads that help people get to and from their residential neighborhoods to, you know, their jobs. So you still want to invest in 512 and 191 and 33 and 309 and all of these other facilities. So it can't all go to one road.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. Over there is Neil, who is the man. He's the guy that makes this thing work and keeps me from sounding like a complete idiot. Neil, thanks for your good work. I've got Matt Assad with me, along with Becky Bradley. Becky Bradley is the one in charge here. Matt's just hanging around.
Matt used to be
a reporter for the morning call,
Jeez,
so you know how that goes. What's that?
I said, man, nothing changes.
He's getting revenge for all those years of reporting.
I can't tell from your accent. Did you grow up in Lehigh Valley?
I grew up in Springfield, Illinois, land of Lincoln.
And Homer Simpson, right?
I don't know. They had a contest, and Springfield, Illinois did not win for being the Simpsons Springfield, Illinois. But there was a voting contest.
Oh, okay.
Like they have a nuclear plant. That's the key.
We do not have a nuclear plant.
So if you're not from the, so you know the admission is you got to be here for 30 years to be treated as somebody from the Lehigh Valley. So you're not quite there yet, are
no,
you?
No, I'm not quite there
now
yet.
Now you're suspicious. No. So I'm sure that when you were 10 years old, you didn't walk into your dinner time and tell your parents you wanted to be a planner when you grew up. What's the course that you took to find your way to being the person in charge of all the stuff that's going on in Lehigh Valley? I mean, arguably, some of the most important decisions that occur in Lehigh Valley come out of your office. It's pretty cool.
Thanks. Well, my family has a strong government background. My dad helped set up the 911 system, when I was a really little kid. And, to me, being around those sorts of things was super interesting, that we were helping build something that could help save people's lives. And there's a lot of things like that. So I had a family that kind of came at things from this is our community. Let's contribute. Let's be part of it, whether we're volunteers or elected or whatever. I really saw in the early 90s, and it was really poignant in the Midwest. I went to undergrad at Southeast Missouri State University, where my great grandmother graduated from college in the late,
wow,
the late 1800s.
Women didn't go to college.
That's right. And so, I went there. It was a point of pride for me.
For Southwest Missouri.
Southeast Missouri. I come from a line of, of women with opinions, as you know. But, I went and I studied historic preservation because I'd always loved history and place and I didn't understand how we got from point A to point B, and that was always interesting to me. And my first job was in downtown revitalization with the state of Illinois at the Illinois Main Street program. And there I got exposed to a lot of planning, and I saw what happened when a Walmart came into a rural community in southern Illinois called Flora, Illinois. And their downtown is only maybe a block and a half long.
It's gone now, huh?
Yeah. Within a year, nearly every business but the barber shop had closed up. And that really, really affected me. And seeing the challenges that then we were supposed to provide support to those communities through Illinois Main Street and help them kind of pick up the pieces and work through their issues. But it was so poignant what one business at the edge of town could do.
Yeah.
But how excited people were that lived 45 minutes away from that Walmart, that now all of a sudden they could buy, paper towels within 45 minutes versus an hour. And just seeing those changes in rural America led me to planning. And that's when I went to University of Pennsylvania.
Which is a pretty impressive school, and I know it because my daughter, I'll brag about, went there too, and so I know, yep, what you went through to get your chops on that one. Mm-hmm. So this gets into the whole issue of how retail evolves, and mm-hmm, as I see it, so the malls came along and wiped out the urban downtowns. We, mm-hmm, we know that. Now, then you have big boxes coming along, and they start challenging the malls. But the big boxes are even getting challenged now by Amazon.
Right.
And so here's my theory, and I'd be interested in your response. I think Amazon's victims are going to be the malls and the big boxes, and that leaves an opening for urban central business districts to have the specialty kinds of stores that aren't going to have those really neat independent toy stores and locally made jewelry and things like that. Does that make sense? That
yes,
that's sort of the progression. And so what? Okay.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. And that's why you see the city of Easton, and they have an independent toy store, right?
Right.
And they have all these things. So you're spot on in your observation there. One of the really interesting things for me since I came at planning because of this mass suburbanization and commercialization and concentration of retail in the 90s, one of the things that we're doing now, and it's in the future LV, is we know that those malls and strip mall facilities are not going to be as viable as they are today, and some of them may not be viable at all in a 25-year horizon. So what do you do with them? Because we've invested.
Build housing on top of them.
Exactly. Really? Yeah, sure.
I love it.
Well,
you're trained,
well, mixed
man.
Use.
Yeah.
That's cool. Mixed use.
You know, there's a need for, I mean, you've already got all this public investment around there in roads, in water and sewer systems. You have
street
a ton
lights.
Of private investment through other utilities, whether it's gas or the cellular infrastructure, broadband, those sorts of things. Plus, you actually have the private investment in the sites themselves. And not to mention, a lot of these sites were subsidized with public dollars through TIFs and other, you know, tax abatement and interesting financing incentives when they were built back in the day anyway. So why would we lose that investment and continue to build further and further out on the farmland that everyone wants to keep? Why shouldn't we reuse those, especially since we need more housing variety in the Lehigh Valley at different price points? We need more options for locations, and we need it to be accessible to where people already live and work.
There are all these strip shopping centers that are struggling to even exist. And it seems to me if you would build, you know, two units of apartments above them and design them in a way that makes them look like the old urban neighborhood kind of appeal, which people like. They just want to be safe, you know.
Yep.
It's already got parking. You know, there's already infrastructure that goes in there. You're basically creating customers for the shops on the first level. Just makes so much sense, but it hasn't happened in Lehigh Valley. Yeah.
If people go to page 96 of the plan, they can see exactly the vision you're talking
this
about.
This is the
we took
the
it a step
Lehigh
further.
Valley planning dream.
It's not a dream. It's not a dream. We
it's
even
a
have green roofs and solar and all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, you've got all kinds of things.
But
going
we wanted
on
to
things.
See like what would happen if we took, for example, the Lehigh.
Lehigh Valley Mall?
Not or, Lehigh Valley
Whitehall
Mall, the Whitehall Mall. Mall, I apologize. The Whitehall Mall, it's right here. The Whitehall Mall, and what it would look like if you did 3 to 6 story buildings, and how that could then connect from a pedestrian perspective and a transit perspective into the neighborhoods and support the investment that's already around there.
And is the
it's not just housing, it's housing and retail and office. And
civic
all that stuff
space,
together.
Parks.
Like it used to be.
Yeah.
Right.
We kind of threw it all at the wall, to be honest with you. We know that this is an idea, but the idea behind the renderings is to get people to talk about that, to see the future in a different way, not to just say, okay, that's declining, it's no good, I don't want to be near it, but what's the potential of that site and how can we leverage that potential to do all the other good things that we want?
You know, there is so much to talk about here, and and Becky, I probably ought to have you on maybe once a year for like an update because you get into so many areas. And I've always said that the smartest radio listeners in Lehigh Valley are listening to WDIY. And so you've got an audience out there that gets these issues, understands these things, and cares about them. We're going to have to take a short break. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Alan Jennings, your host. Your host is Alan Jennings. My guests are Matt Assad, who's managing editor at the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, and more importantly, Becky Bradley, the CEO. What do you call yourself, executive director?
Executive director.
Yeah, I hate the CEO title.
Yeah, me too.
At the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. They have a lot of decisions that they get to make, so stick around. We'll welcome you back.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Alan Jennings, your host. My guest tonight, Becky Bradley, the executive director of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, and Matt Assad, who is the managing editor. I knew Matt, if his name sounds familiar, it's because he was a reporter for many years, doing probably the toughest news coverage when he was there. I liked dealing with Matt. Sorry that we lost him at the morning call, but I'm sure he's very helpful to Becky.
On occasions.
Mostly.
Let's talk about race and class for a minute. I know that's everybody's favorite subject. I really wish we didn't have to talk about it, but it's very real. Mm-hmm. I see so many signs of racism in Lehigh Valley. I could give you a couple of examples. One of the biggest credit unions in Lehigh Valley rejects Latino home buyers, people applying for mortgages, three times more than they reject white applications, and they reject African Americans four times more. Here's another piece of news. 79% of suburban high school kids take the SAT. 8% of Latino kids take the SAT. 4% of African American kids take the SAT. You wonder why we have income disparity and the eventual wealth disparity that goes with it. So I have long looked at land use planning and its role in segregating our community by race and class. You have the ability to require minimum lot sizes within a municipal boundary. And unless there's something to do with access to water, the sewer infrastructure, the only explanation for that practice would be to exclude certain people. And I think we know who those certain people are. They are people that don't look like them. And the consequence is that poor people, and unfortunately in our area, mostly people of color, get kind of no choice but to be stuck in the cities. And everybody else gets to head out to the suburbs. There's a land use planning element there. There's a Lehigh Valley Planning Commission issue there. Mm-hmm. Is that like too much the third rail? How do you guys look at and deal with that particular issue?
It's not a third rail issue. I mean, I think it's one of the, shameful things that we've seen all across America for, decades and decades and decades and decades and decades. It's one of the reasons why we did a region-wide equity analysis last year. It's the first time that we ever tried that. And I think we learned from that. We could actually add some more to it. But it's on our website, which
DataLV.
And we looked at a variety of factors, everything from educational attainment, which you mentioned, to single parent households, access to vehicles, housing affordability, all of these things. We want to add health into it, too, because we think that's one of the other outcomes of not having access to things that can be an issue. And we want to work more on those issues. First of all, we had to figure out, really, what is our situation in the Lehigh Valley? And where are our areas that have the least access to opportunity and are the most inequitable? And we have a full map of it. Now, we realize that could also be a double-edged sword as well. But we're using it as a platform, especially with this multi-municipal plans, to start to talk through why these issues are occurring and what they can do from a zoning and subdivision land development ordinance perspective at the municipal level to start to fix some of these things. But one of the biggest things, and I know that this is also very hard to talk about, is we keep building age-segregated communities as well. You'll hear a lot of conversations about, these 55 and up are great because they don't add kids to the school. Well, right. when did we stop thinking that children were important, and why do we vilify them? And why do we vilify families?
People don't want to pay for anything anymore, but their own.
Right. But I mean, these are key parts of our society, and that ties into some of these issues of race and class and socioeconomic status and all of these other things. We have to start addressing it in a real way. And it's not something that we can do alone. We wanted to at least get a baseline of information together that would help organizations like yours or the United Way or even municipal governments themselves, our health networks, to make better decisions and to really think about what this means to us long term. Because if everyone has equal access to opportunity and we are more equitable, we're all going to do better.
Yeah. There's definitely things we can do. Even we mentioned these multi-municipal plans earlier. Each and every one of them, we do a housing analysis. And we're in the middle of that now. And all of them say they don't have enough affordable housing.
I've been singing that song for years, and it's like
we can prove it.
A chant, and yeah, well, so.
So you were always right. Now you can use our information.
My wife would never say, "Would you call my wife?" our organization created this effort called Color Outside the Lines, and it's intended to get together the key valley-wide interest groups and people of color in the area and regular folks as well to talk about what kinds of things we can do in the valley to open doors that are historically slammed shut. And I think you guys should probably be working on that with us. And it didn't occur to me until we scheduled this that I should have included you. I don't know if it's something you have an interest or the time and capacity to do, but we're going to develop a, you know, try to identify the things that are the symptoms of racism. We can't change what's in people's hearts, but we can change what comes out of their mouths and how they behave. Mm-hmm. And start, you know, opening the door as, because we all are all part of the human family and we are all Americans after all.
And we do have an opportunity to change this because we are growing pretty quickly and pretty consistently. So, and it's mostly due to in-migration.
It's going
to
be a majority-minority community.
Yes. Yes.
It is in-migration.
Yeah.
We're taking on 4,000 to 6,000 new people every year.
And they are a lot more diverse and from different countries and different yes. backgrounds and... all of that stuff is changing the Lehigh Valley, whether certain people want it to or not. We need to be able to have a dialogue on why our diversity is important and what it means. I mean, we'll be glad to be at the table with you.
Yeah, that would be a great addition. Okay, so the commissioners on the planning commission side, I screwed up with the transportation side earlier.
How it's confusing.
How do you get to be a commissioner? Yeah. How do you get to be on the planning commission?
Both of the counties have half of the seats. And obviously, you need an odd number of seats. So every other year, it flips between Bethlehem City Council and Easton City Council to be the because Bethlehem's in both Lehigh and Northampton County.
Right.
And the only community that is by county. Right. So it flips in between. But... folks just need to talk to the counties themselves. The counties make those appointments to the commission. And it's interesting because we have citizen members, which, by the way, I learned is rare for, you know, councils of governments, metropolitan planning organizations, county planning agencies, bi-county planning agencies in our case. But there's a certain number of elected officials from boroughs and townships. The cities have permanent seats, and then the county executives each have a permanent seat, and then a member of Northampton County Council and a member of Lehigh County Commissioners. But there's also citizen members. But we have 37 commissioners total. So it's a really broad-based group of folks. And if people are interested, I would absolutely encourage them to talk to the counties. Go to the county executives, too.
Okay. And by the way, I don't think we've really kind of emphasized this, but the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission on the web is lvpc.org. And Matt, you suggested the data was there under data LV or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, there is a full menu of everything for housing and transportation. In this case, the data for the equity is actually in the Who We Are tab. Oh. It's at the bottom of Who We Are, and you can get all the demographics at the top of that. And if you keep going down, you get... sort of get a treat because there's a bunch of maps and there's a bunch of interactive things. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, you can get it by census tract too if, you know, people want that level of detail.
You know, one of the things that's shocking that I found, and I'm pretty sure I got it from you guys, was that you could be as much as 25 times more likely to be poor depending on what municipality you're born into in the Lehigh Valley. You know, that the child poverty rate, and I think it was...
Yep.
It might have been Lower Saucon was literally 125th the child poverty rate in the city of Allentown. That's just not right. And what really mystifies me is how few people who have made it concede the role that luck played in their lives. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the fact that you're born in the 20th century, that you are an American. You know, mm-hmm. that your parents loved you, that you have, you know, that your skin is white, you know, that you are, you know, all those things are luck. And yet people seem so unwilling to concede the role of luck. But I mean, you know, yeah. again, mm-hmm. you...
It definitely comes down to what neighborhood you were born in.
Yeah.
In some cases, if you go on the equity maps, they're interactive. You can kind of click on the census tract and find out, that, you know, the average median income there, and you can see it. You can, there's other maps that break it down by school district. You can see which school districts have the highest median income compared to others, and it's a pretty big difference.
So let's get into affordable housing. Mm-hmm. You know, I called it a crisis for years. You get tired of the word, so now I'm calling it a disaster. you guys have done some work on this issue.
We need to do more.
What can you add to that conversation, that issue?
Where do I start? You know, it's interesting. The first thing we started doing, and this is about 6 years ago when I first got to the commission, I did not understand why we didn't have, like, all of this housing information. We had information on endangered species and every fatality, transportation fatality in the Lehigh Valley, but we didn't have a lot on housing. So we put together a lot of information on housing, and then we've had a commitment to updating it. At first, we weren't quite sure what to do with it. We needed to get through the future LV, the regional plan, and kind of bring that in along with these other things and kind of get this broader, more comprehensive picture. But I think now is the time when we actually need to build a broader coalition. A lot of that stuff is already there. You've been an integral part of that, especially on the affordability issue. But we need to go directly to developers and say, look, I mean, yes, there is a need for apartments, but not necessarily all apartments in one place, right? We need a broader look at those sorts of things. Home ownership is a problem for people in their 30s. They have debt-to-income ratios that don't support.
Student loans
are crazy, right? You know, there's people in their 50s that are just paying off their student loans and sending their first child to college now. That's a reality. And that's a Gen X issue. That's, you know, premillennial issue. So, you know, the whole way that we think about things has to change, especially if we want to be able to adequately support this growing population, the types of jobs that we want to retain and to nurture here. You know, housing has to go part and parcel with that. The county's wanted us to put together a housing working group, and it's in our work plan for this year. And I think we set the date for December 18th, I want to say. I might be saying this wrong, but we can let people know at the commission. But that kind of grew out of that event that you guys had at DeSales University maybe a year and a half ago with the developers roundtable, I think it was. But we're busy making sure that all the information is updated on housing sales and where things and what things are selling for, how that relates to housing availability, and trying to get some of the things that we're good at, which is the data piece, available to people like you to then go out and make decisions. But I think we have to sit down together and figure out what's the next step.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's such a complex issue. Yeah. You know, there's so many elements to it. And you know, one, for example, is that, you know, we do homeownership counseling. We do these seminars 7 times a year to teach people how to buy a house responsibly. One of the seminars, we had 55 people who were current at that time renting in Allentown. And I asked them, how many of you plan on buying a house in the city of Allentown? Not one raised their hand. Why? Because of the schools. Now, the good news is low-income people of color care about the quality of their kids' education. Mm-hmm. The bad news is you're in tough trouble if you've got nobody, even who's lower income, wants to live there. So what that does is that means they're willing to rent in suburban municipalities just so they can put those kids in better schools. You know, this is a tough, tough issue, and I don't know how we get at it. I want to go after the developer of the Martin Tower site. He's proposing some 530 units of housing, and I think he needs to be thinking about whether some of those shouldn't be affordable for low to moderate income people. Mm-hmm. Is inclusionary zoning an allowed practice in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah. We actually have a model ordinance on our website on inclusionary zoning.
Does it come out of Mountjoy?
A whole bunch of things. Yes. And then some other things too. You can do it. And there's a lot of communities that actually have it built in. They just don't necessarily call it that. Right. They might exercise it. They might not. But it gets back to your earlier point about lot size and density and some of those other things. There's also just doing the right thing. And I don't think we talk enough about that. I think we can say, okay, well, you can do this under the law or not do this. But, hey, if you want to come to our community, this is what we expect of you.
Yeah, we do that with the banks all the time.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so it's one of those things where, and, you know, I'm not picking on the Martin Tower developer, but I'm just talking in general. Like, this is one of those situations where we need to be able to have the conversation, and we're hoping maybe the housing working group is a way to build a coalition and give people some of the skills to do that. You already have them. You've been doing that for years, but there's a lot of people that can learn from you that could help them in their decision making, or know that they could even call you if they needed support on a development.
And I think communities are only now realizing that they have a little bit of leverage. They're starting to ask for things, and we're seeing it. It's a completely different subject, but that we're seeing it with the warehouses. It used to be they just let them throw up a box, but now they're making them put in amenities, and they're making them put in parking, and they're doing little things. So things that aren't necessarily required in the ordinance, they're asking for them.
Is there any
leverage
there?
We can do that with housing.
Is there any leverage there to get them to preserve land or anything like that? Is that?
I mean, they can. It depends on the situation. But that piece gets back to the zoning. If you allow them to do 100%, you know, impervious lot coverage, well, then that's what they're going to want to do, because they're going to want to maximize their return.
Right. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Alan Jennings, your host. My guest tonight, Becky Bradley, Executive Director of Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, Matt Assad, Managing Editor of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Let me get into, I only have a few minutes left. Neil's waving at me, or about to wave at me. What is the toughest issue you face these days?
Where do we start? I'm extremely concerned about a lot of things. One of the things is the conversation about taxes and funding those things that we've always considered societal goods. You know, being able to get from, you know, your home to your kid's school or to your job is something that we take for granted. The fact that transportation funding in America, not just the Lehigh Valley, has not increased in 20 years, yet costs have gone up. The number of people has increased, especially in a growing region like ours, coupled with things like these transportation-based business boom that we have, which, by the way, is the largest in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. But it's here. And a lot of it gets back to our municipal governments and not necessarily having adequate zoning to manage some of that and the laws and the structure. But, I mean, some of those issues could really adversely affect the Lehigh Valley in potentially in an irreparable way. We have to get around that. It's money, it's laws, it's public perception, it's being human. And that's just one of probably 20 things that we could talk about. I mean, I know you
one of the big overarching one that kind of seems to come up with every multi-municipal plan and every community is sort of striking that balance. Because everybody wants to save the farmland and the open space, but then we're bringing in 5,000 new people a year. So, like, where do you put them, and how do you maintain the character while you grow? Because growth is success. That's how it's seen, right? So if we want to continue to grow, and we have incredibly consistently since World War II, how do you do that without kind of messing up what everybody loves?
Mm-hmm. I believe we're at a real tipping point right now. I mean, we are a mature region. We're not talking about being 50% agricultural community and 50% something else anymore. We've already crossed that threshold. So we are many, many, many things. We're a very diverse economy. We're a very diverse community. We have challenges that need to be addressed like the mature region that we are. And that is a substantial change in almost everyone's lifetime. We cannot do business as usual.
That's all the time we have tonight. Thanks for listening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Alan Jennings, your host. My guest tonight, Becky Bradley and Matt Assad from Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Thanks to both of you.